Let me welcome all of you, and I'm sure we can start. Let me start with, are there any apologies?
Good morning, Chair, and the members. No, I didn't receive any apologies.
Okay, honorable members, let me say that today we are supposed to be dealing with only two issues, but in one. The first one is supposed to be the finalization of the questions to the minister, but also we had agreed that at 11 we were to adjourn for few seconds, then be able to have a discussion on what is supposed to be the way forward, having dealt with that process. In front of me, I've got a letter. The Ministry of Mineral Resources, Republic of South Africa, goes blah, blah, blah. Date 31st October 2017. Attention Portfolio Secretary, Ms. A. Boss. Apology for not being able to attend the Portfolio Committee on State Capture. I regret to advise that Minister Mosebenzi Zwane will not be able to attend the above mentioned meeting. The reason for the apology is that the Honorable Minister is attending Cabinet meeting and other crucial meetings in Cape Town. Yours respectfully, Melusi Nkabeni, the PLO, Department of Mineral Resources. As I said, the purpose of this meeting was to finalize that work. And I must say, without soliciting the advice of the committee, we had sent a letter to, where is this letter? We had sent a letter to Parliament Legal Unit. Let me check my profile to have. Oh. This is the letter which is dated 24 October. To the Chief Parliamentary Legal Advisor, request for legal advisor, allegations of state capture in organs of state. Portfolio Committee has received a correspondence from the House Chairperson requesting the committee to investigate allegations of state capture in organs of state within the parameters of rules and report any findings where applicable to the National Assembly. The Portfolio Committee on Minerals held a meeting on Wednesday, 18 October, where the minister was invited to attend to respond to allegations levels against him. Committee requests that it be allocated with the legal advisor to assist in investigation duty, the allegations of state capture, and taking the process forward. The next meeting is scheduled to be on Wednesday, 1st November 2017, where the minister is expected again to respond to the questions asked. That is from the chairperson. We made this request in light that it can be able to assist in guiding the committee going forward. And I must say that I didn't allocate or look for any other item because I feel we have to deal with this matter. And unfortunately, from the committee's point of departure. I'm not saying it's an error. It might be something that we never considered. There is no specification. We seem to be more reliant that the minister at any given moment will get time and be in the committee. But also reading on the letter is not giving us also a commitment when the minister is willing to appear in front of the committee going forward. Because I know we're dealing with a very sensitive matter, sometimes you wish you can do things that will assist the committee, but you then realize that anything is subject to interpretation. So it is precisely for that reason. But also linked to this is the fact that we might be sitting here depending on what then has to be done. I won't, it's not my intention to prescribe, but it is up to the committee to say no next step or any other matter that can be done until we finish this one. That is why I said it could have been an element of an oversight where we didn't also specify what route do we intend to move. And I think the committee, it's up to us as a committee to say any movement forward is completely dependent. Then it will mean we suspend everything in relation to this until we are able to finalize. So I've invited the Parliament's legal services. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I think the first issue is what one is presenting, and then maybe subsequently we can then be able to give the legal services. You see, the problem is that I always say this thing, at least it's not too much titles. In police there's something called constable, sergeant, major, general, general, all those kind of. At least I won't be hurting you when I say Advocate Jenkins, ne? Yes. I won't be hurting you. I won't give you a title that you will feel I'm belittling. So we've got Advocate Jenkins, whom we are allocated, we are given. It's not permanent that he's going to be here. This is another limitation. We were told he's now allocated full-time in public enterprise. We hope we'll get someone who is allocated full-time so that whatever developments that are happening, that person can be able to take us through. So for now, this is what I'm presenting to you, honourable members. No frills, nothing, is as it is. Thank you very much. Honourable Mandela, any other take? Honourable Schmidt?
Thank you, Chair.
It's going to be too long, Honourable Schmidt, to say Honourable Advocate Schmidt. Honourable Mandela.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. Just want to gain clarity, Honourable Chair, on your input in regards to the non-availability of the Minister. Is there an indication, perhaps, as to when he will be able to avail himself to the committee, as we do know that he has always come before the committee? Perhaps has he indicated when is the earliest date that he will be able to appear before the committee? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to follow on with the last statement, and that was he needs to be given a reasonable opportunity to provide his version of the events. And as much as substantively we have the view that there's enough for there to be a substantive inquiry into the matter, I think procedurally we need to follow the process in its fullest. So the question basically is, when is he available? And within a reasonable measure, one should accommodate him attending to the committee and finally giving answers as to some of the other issues which we need to raise with him. But it will all depend on what indications there are when he will be available.
Honorable Mandela, I read the letter from the department where it comes from up until to the person who wrote the letter. So the answer is clear. As you said, there is no word that I left out. I'm sure it also addresses the point. The answer will have to come from us if I were to help members. It's not making a commitment. And I don't want to bring someone who is not a subject of the committee, except if the DG with his who is present can give us that clarity, including the point that Honorable Schmidt is raising. But there is no date where the minister says, I will be available. But it also suffices to say, I did have a discussion also with the House Chair, and probably also for the benefit of the department, he did may say that he is willing to consider any of the days, in as much as they may not fall on our scheduled day. Because I think the difficulty that we might be having here is that the cabinet and this committee is Wednesday. So he did make that commitment that as long as we get the date, he can be able to provide us and give us that day to be able to meet as a committee. That is the first thing. But also linked to this, I don't know, Advocate Schmidt, I don't want to enter it on the debate, but if I were to be upfront, I get worried sometimes that if we don't have a picture of what do we want or want to project. But I think it's important just to start on the first issue. If you look at the letter of the House Chair, we have not started, whether it's an inquiry or whatever form of an investigation. That letter just said, start with your oversight responsibility. So we will still have to discuss or say what is the way forward. It's precisely for that reason that I said probably we must get the legal opinion from Parliament that can project us. And if I were to go into details, I will then come later on some of the issues that I think they will even require to get the attention of the legal services. Probably they can be able to guide and advise. I don't know what to do. But you want to make a take again, Honorable Mandela?
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I'd like to then recommend and suggest, Honorable Chair, that we try and ascertain from the Minister as to when is the next date he may be available to the committee, so that at least what we parted on in terms of trying to ensure the rest of the questions that members had were put to him, so that we can wrap up this chapter. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Schmidt.
I'm convinced there are a lot of questions that we do not yet know the answers to. However, even on what I've seen, I'm convinced that we need to be able to interrogate this matter properly. I think you're right. I think we need to go back to the Minister and ask him for dates. And I think we should be, as a committee, obviously the constraints of the system notwithstanding, be completely flexible about a Tuesday or a Friday as alternate days. And then finally, I think, and perhaps the legal advisor can tell us more about this, but as a committee, we're empowered to set the day ourselves. I mean, we're being very accommodating here. But in the end, it's up to us. If we say, please come to the committee on such and such a day, the minister needs to come on that day.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to know whether Mr. Jenkins is prepared to give us advice at this point in time. We can always do with legal advice, Mr. Chair.
I know. Sometimes you don't agree with me until you get that advice. That's why I brought it. Look, Honourable Members, I surely you will have to assist us and guide us. I it's not for me from a chair's point of view to say this. But I think for, except if there is another matter, from a committee's point of view, we should be able to say as a committee, when do we expect the minister? And also make note of the fact that the letter is not giving us a date. And like Honorable Mandela said, we have never had the problem of the minister not coming when the committee needs him, sometimes even voluntarily. But the fact of the matter sorry, is that I'm just being hypothetical. Not saying that's the case. But what if the minister says I'm available on the 30th of November? I'm just making, I'm being hypothetical. Or on the 28th of February or whatever. I'm just being hypothetical. That's why I'm saying at the end of the day, it's up to us as honorable members, because in my view, bills, you see, like in open blank check and say when can you be available, it may not also have any sense of agency on the part of the committee. That's the first part. The second part is what Honorable Lorima says. I've been of the view that sometimes to operate on a in a situation where you don't know what should be the next step can be the one exercise that that's why I'm saying maybe Honorable Advocate Jenkins can assist. But can I, with the limited powers vested in me, get from the DG, if with your permission, as to when can we expect the availability of the minister, or when can he come back, because he's in the meeting, and indicate, so that at least if we meet now, it means we will meet again, let's hypothetically assume next week Wednesday. If we meet next week Wednesday and between now we don't get the response and then say no, this is the other date, when the expectation could be something else. But if Honorable Mandela, you want to come before that, the DG. DG, any hope?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. Chair, I would like to advise that we should be given some time during the course of this week. We'll revert back to you as the chairperson of PPC to confirm the date in which the minister would be available. I'm sure, I mean, that's what I have also sensed from some of the members, that perhaps the minister should be consulted, and we would definitely make sure that we revert back to the PPC. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Is it possible to say by Friday at least can we get notice on the date? Probably not less than 2 days in the week, so that we can make the necessary considerations from the point of the committee. Honorable Mandela, then Honorable Lorin.
No, Chair. With that said, I think I'll await the legal opinion on the matters we need to attend to in terms of the way forward. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think this is the right way forward. I would like to suggest, though, that we do indicate some kind of time limit on this. These are incredibly serious matters. We can't let them drag on for too long. So if we can say, I request a date, say within the next 2 weeks, I think that would be, just to give it some kind of time period, I think it would be useful.
Okay. I think that's fine, but as I said, that the DG will have to come back at least by Friday, so that we've got a sense of when, and we give notice to members. The issues that I think we were looking at, I think it's going to ask, which we also asked for the legal opinion, is that what could be the possible way forward? What are the issues that probably are expected from the committee going forward? But the second one, I think there was an issue which I said I will not be able to respond. I could have relied on Honorable Schmidt. He said that when it comes to that opinion, it will be a little bit tainted, in as much as we should be getting a free legal service, but that can't be relied on. it will be a skewed one. There were issues that when honorable members were raising these, for instance, questions, by information they were said to be sub judice. Now, from a point of a lay person like myself, Advocate Jenkins, I was told by one good, reliable lawyer, lecturer, that you don't question the law, you ask the law. So I couldn't question the law, I couldn't ask the law, I'm asking the law. And at this stage, the view on the law rests with yourself. So I think let's, we'll give it to you, and then I think from there the committee will be able to entertain the process going forward. You can... The floor is yours now, Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning. Honourable members, colleagues, officials, good morning. Chairperson, my intention is just to take you through the legal opinion that was prepared for a different committee, but it's exactly the same issues. So I would like to present that opinion. I think we've distributed by mail to all the members. Oh, give it to the chair. Well, it's an opinion that was prepared by our office in August of this year for the Public Enterprises Committee concerning the investigations that was coming from the House Chair into the so-called leaked emails. And the question we'd had to deal with there is what process must be followed by the committee. So, Chair, if you want to give me that indulgence, I will deal with that. I will also then deal with certain ancillary issues that were raised now about the resources, support to the committee, the issue of the summoning of a witness or compelling a witness to attend a meeting before a parliamentary committee. I want to say just something broadly about the purpose of this exercise, and then, of course, the sub judice rule which you referred to, Chairperson. So, Chair, just to start off with the legal view on the process to be followed. From the start of the Constitution, when we look at Section 43, well, let me look at subsection 3 of Section 42 of the Constitution, it sets out the general functions of the NA and the NCOP, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, and, of course, the National Assembly is there to, amongst other things, scrutinize and oversee executive action. And that is to ensure that there's government by the people under the Constitution. And one goes further then to Section 55 of the Constitution, and it says that the National Assembly must, so it's imperative, it's a compelling provision that says you must ensure that executive organs of state in the national sphere of government are accountable to it, and you must maintain oversight of the exercise of national executive authority. Going further down the Constitution, we see Section 56 provides that the National Assembly may summon any person to appear before it and then compel in terms of national legislation, and I'll get back to that part, for that person to appear before the committee. So that provision is there to support your mandate. While the Constitution says you must provide oversight, it also gives you powers to ensure that you can do that oversight. And then the process itself, of course, and it's echoed in the rule, section 57 of the Constitution says that the National Assembly and its committees may determine and control its own internal arrangements, proceedings and procedures. Well, the rule says the committee also determines its own procedure. So when we're dealing with this mandate of this specific portfolio committee, it's important to realize that the committee can decide how we're going to do this. There's no prescript in the rules or the constitution how the committee must do specific work. I'm going to compare that in this legal opinion to other areas where legislation is quite specific how certain things must be done. When we look at a committee's mandate, we go to the rules. The National Assembly rules have been reviewed recently, but Rule 227 says specifically that a committee may monitor, investigate, inquire into and make recommendations concerning any executive organ of state within its area of competence. So let's focus on the word investigate. This committee is competent in terms of the rules to investigate, to look at something. Of course, as I said in the Constitution, you can inquire into it and you have oversight, responsibility to have oversight over that. To enable this, the Constitution and then further in the powers, privileges and immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act, Cabinet members, deputy ministers and members of the House, including the committee of course, have freedom of speech and are not liable for any civil or criminal proceedings, arrest, imprisonment or damages for anything that they've said or produced before the Assembly or a committee. So that is what we just call your freedom of speech or your privilege, parliamentary privilege. In contrast, officials do not have that privilege. So I can actually be held liable for what I'm saying to you, whereas you can't. So it's quite relevant to determine what process we are going to follow in the end. When we go further, then, if you want to discuss this, I'm going just working through the opinion that was drafted by my colleague, by our office. See, the Constitution has put the mandate there. The Constitution also envisages that there's a multi-party participatory process in Parliament. It's quite specific when it says that Parliament may draft rules for its procedures, but it must always ensure that there's multi-party democracy, there's participation of minority parties and so on. So it's a very important principle that to have a pluralistic view on areas, and it echoes in the saying that we always have of Rainbow Nation. So members are then mandated from different parties to participate in committees. They are protected with freedom of speech and they have authority, or they are empowered to be able to summon anyone to appear before it so they can then give effect to its constitutional obligation. So when we look at how Parliament has done these oversight over the years, one can see that. Well, let me first say this, Chairperson. I mean, I want to refer just to the Democratic Alliance versus the Speaker Court case, where the link between freedom of speech and oversight was clearly marked and clearly highlighted. And the court said there that for Parliament to properly exercise its oversight function over the executive, it must operate in an environment that guarantees members freedom from arrest, detention, prosecution, or harassment of whatever nature. Absent this freedom, Parliament may be cowed, with the result that oversight over the executive may be illusory. So, in short, you need that protection to do effective oversight. So therefore, the link is clearly there, and that is why the mandate is given specifically to members of Parliament and not, for instance, a retired judge to lead an inquiry. That issue that I'm dealing with now will become clearer, I hope, when one compare a general oversight function with a specific, this is what I would call a statutory inquiry. I think the clearest example of a statutory inquiry, and we were, while I was in court yesterday, we were dealing with that, Section 12 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act sets out that Parliament, in the case of misconduct or alleged misconduct, can have an inquiry into whether a member is guilty or not guilty of misconduct. And then the Act requires that there must be a disciplinary process in accordance with a procedure that is reasonable and procedurally fair. That's subsection 3 of section 12 of the Powers and Privileges Act. So then explain that there must be this procedure, and we have a schedule to the rules that gives effect to that provision that sets out how the committee must follow that procedure. And yesterday we were in court dealing with a challenge to the procedure, a review challenge. So what we have there is we have a statutory inquiry, it's prescribed in law, and of course it comes down to some kind of administrative action, quasi-judicial process, which someone then has taken on review to a court, and we'll see what happens in the future, whether that challenge was successful or unsuccessful. Another example would be the SABC or the Broadcasting Act, the SABC inquiry, which we had earlier this year. We also had a previous one into the chairperson, which ended in a court case, the Chabalala judgment. I think that judgment was dated 2014. I think Section 15A of the Broadcasting Act requires Parliament to make a finding and then advise, if one wants to call it that word, advise the President of it. And the President will then take a decision without having any discretion then to dismiss the board or the chairperson of the board, depending on how the resolution of the committee is. So what we have there, to summarize that part, is that we have a statutory provision that requires Parliament to come with a finding. And then Parliament implements that finding by having a committee that runs a certain process. Again, that process is not prescribed in the Act, but what's important is that finding must be made. When we look at the Media Diversity and Development Agency Act, there's something similar in that, and I'm also dealing with the Portfolio Committee on Communications with that, where it says that a board member of the MDDA, the Media Diversity and Development Agency Board, can be removed. A member of that board can be removed on a recommendation after a finding by the House, by the NA. So again, there's a certain issue that must be reached, a tipping point, a trigger, or however we want to call it. Parliament must make a finding, or the National Assembly must make a finding, in terms of the competency or the misconduct of an MDDA board member. Report it to the President. The President does not have a discretion, must then implement and remove that member. I want to contrast this to a general oversight responsibility that the Constitution has given Parliament, to say that you must maintain oversight over the exercise of executive action, and you must ensure that all organs of state in the national sphere of government are accountable to it. And one can go further, we can look at Section 92 of the Constitution, that also provides that deputy ministers and ministers are responsible for the powers and functions, and they must regularly report to Parliament on these, on the exercise of their powers and functions. That's Section 92 of the Constitution. So coming from that, including the rules that I've referred to earlier, I think, Chairperson, one must ask the question, what is the purpose, first of all, of the inquiry? In the SABC case, in the MDDA case, in the powers and privileges case, there's a certain tipping point that we must reach. In other words, a finding must be made for a further process to be kicked into operation. For instance, the removal of a board member in the case of the Powers and Privileges Act, a certain sanction on the member who was found guilty of misconduct. But first there must be a finding of misconduct or contempt of Parliament, and then a sanction can be recommended and implemented. In my view, in the case of the Minerals Resources and the Minister for Mineral Resources, it's a general oversight function. I mean, unless Parliament is driving towards a bigger process that's also set out in the Constitution to remove Cabinet as a whole, there's no finding that is made in this instance. There is a general oversight responsibility that's resting on Parliament, and the committee is empowered to decide how to do that. The issue of risk needs to be taken into account as well, Chairperson. When we look, and I'm just looking at my notes here, I've left out another example, but I'm sure you're very well aware of it, and that's the Code of Ethics, which we set out in our rules. Parliament also has an inquisitorial procedure when we're dealing with codes of ethics or alleged breach of Code of Ethics, and that's before the Joint Committee on Ethics and Members' Interest. And already there we had a challenge to the process, in a successful challenge, by the way, in the Maimani versus the chairperson of the Joint Committee. case where they said your procedures that you followed were not in accordance with natural justice. So both in the Maimani case, which I've just referred to, as well as the Chabalala case, the court have said when you engage in a certain process, when you engage in a certain inquisitorial process where there's specific charges and there's evidence being led, the laws of natural justice require that you give certain rights to the person that might be affected. In other words, questions that must be answered then is, will that person have the right to legal representation? Will that person have the right to cross-examine what is put before the committee? Should everybody be put under oath? Of course, each step of that process can be challenged with a judicial review process. So it is something to keep in mind when the committee decides its process, what it wants to follow. I mean, I think the Chabalala case was quite to the point where you say, if you want to use a specific process, you must adapt your procedure to that specific process. So, Chairperson, what I would want to just respond to one or two things. I mean, in the end, our opinion was, Chairperson, and it was not, as it's public knowledge now, our recommendation was to say that this is a general oversight process. In terms of what Parliament adopted in its oversight and accountability model, which was also used then for Parliament to plan and to budget, and that's now parliamentary staff, a certain process was followed. So the general oversight exercise where we call a minister to explain certain things, where members ask questions to the minister to get certain responses from the minister and then reports to the Assembly, that is the envisaged process. And that's the recommendation from our committee, from our office as well, when it comes to these kind of general oversight inquiries, not to have a sort of focused quasi-judicial process, which we saw in the statutory inquiries from the SABC, Powers and Privileges Act, but we also see it now in the Public Enterprises Committee. There are a certain risk, and the committee can decide it, but we need to highlight those risks, Chairperson. I think the issue of getting witnesses here, let's be specific if I may, Chair, the Minister. In Parliament, we have summoned certain people to appear, but it is a measure of last resort. So in my experience working with the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, certain people were reluctant to appear. The committee would write to them and to say, much like was the suggestion, Chairperson, to say, give us certain dates in which you can, to see whether the committee can program itself accordingly. The committee can't. The committee has the power to say, well, we can't meet like that. This is an urgent matter. We can't wait for your business. We need to then get you here. If you cannot appear, we will summon you, and that will do in terms of the Powers and Privileges Act, Chairperson. I think that Section 14 sets out how to summon a witness, and that witness is entitled to some kind of reimbursement of costs if they're summoned, even if they're not summoned, but the witness, of course, if it's a government official or a minister, that cannot be, we're talking private witnesses. But the failure to appear after summons has been set out is a criminal offence, so there is a compelling issue around that. But it's, first of all, a measure of last resort, and the process that's out there, if I can just quickly touch on it, I mean, the committee itself must resolve, must make a resolution to summons someone, the minister, and then that would go to the Speaker of the House, the Speaker of the National Assembly, to issue that summons. The Secretary to Parliament will send it to the Sheriff of the Court, who will then deliver the summons. Because it's a measure of last resort, our office will always recommend, let's write to the Minister, much like was suggested, give us certain dates so that we can deal with this. But the Minister cannot refuse. The Constitution, I've referred to Section 92, and I've referred to the other provisions in the Constitution, which ensures that Parliament have the power and that members of Parliament are protected to exercise this oversight function. That's the checks and balances. That's the intention of an open and transparent government, and that's written in the Constitution. So there's nothing strange about that. Parliament has used it. So, Chairperson, it can be done. It's no problem, and you will have support from our office. The issue of the sub judice rule, Chairperson, is an interesting one. I don't recommend that one just use it the term very lightly. It's been used sometimes to ensure that certain questions are not asked or so forth, but there are two levels of it, and one is sort of the legal level, and there was a court case on that called the Midi case that dealt with freedom of the press and so forth. And the courts have said, vis-a-vis press, and press making certain publications about what is happening in courts, the court have said, you know, we're not that sensitive to actually worry too much about what is happening in the media. So the test is really whether there will be some kind of impact on the judicial process when someone is talking about what is happening in courts outside of court. But the second level is Parliament's level. We've got a different look on it. In terms of what Parliament is doing is it's a self-imposed rule out of respect for the judiciary. So it's not necessarily a contested area between Parliament and the judiciary. So in our new rules, our new rule is 89. I'll just read it for the committee and just get there. This is now the reviewed rules of the National Assembly. No member may reflect upon the merits of any matter on which a judicial decision in a court of law is pending. So one can unpack that. And when we look at that, I think emphasis must be placed on the word merits. So no member may reflect upon the merits of any matter. So whether someone would be guilty or not guilty, in short. There can be more to it. Court cases sometimes get complicated, but there can be more to it. But you cannot reflect on the merits of a matter. It doesn't mean that because there's a court case, the committee's hands are tied. That's not what it means. The committee can certainly proceed and ask questions and inquire into a matter, although it's before a court. If I can use an interesting example, I mean, I said yesterday we're dealing with the issue of a fair procedure, a disciplinary procedure which members of Parliament are subjected to. While that court case is going on, it doesn't mean the subcommittee on the review of the rules cannot look at it and ask, what is happening in the court case? Is it going to impact on the way we must look at rules? Should we change any of the rules? If the decision goes this way or that way, what will be the impact on our work here? Those questions are legitimate. It can be asked. So whenever there is a matter before a court, it doesn't automatically shut the committee off. That's what I said. I don't, as an official of Parliament, I've always said this easy use of sub judice should be tempered, should be moderated, and a committee chair or the Speaker of the House should look at whether are we reflecting on the merits of a matter on which a decision in a court of law is pending. Court of law, not a judicial inquiry, not a disciplinary process before a retired judge or anything. We're talking here about a court of law, so it's about the separation of powers, and it's that courtesy that Parliament extends to the other two branches of government, the executive and the judiciary, specifically in this case. So, Chair, I think I'm going to just pause there. I think I've said quite a lot. Thank you for your indulgence, and I'm prepared to take questions if there are any. Thanks.
Okay. That sounds very tough, starting law. Honorable members, I'm tempted, not that I'm switching off, I'm tempted to say maybe go back to the decision we took last time. This might be a better discussion to have when we have concluded phase one. I'm not trying to close you out. After we have finished phase one, which is about finalizing the questions to the minister, and then start to have discussions on this type, on this presentation. I'm not applying the sub judice rule, but I fear if we were to go into inner discussions in a manner that might prejudice members when it comes to the questions to the minister, because already you might have a prejudged process, but it's up to you. For an example, some of the issues that relate to the processes that are suggested may take us to another level of the discussion. The last time we agreed that we were going to take those questions up to 11 o'clock. And then from 11, we'll have a discussion on what do we think should be the way forward. But if honorable members want to ask questions, you are free to do so. Honorable Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's a pity we didn't have this briefing in advance like we asked, Mr. Chair, because, you know, there were certain answers just fleetingly referred to as a matter of sub judice, and I'm not going to answer it. But can I, not commenting further on that, just ask, there are four committees involved, as far as I recall, if that's still the position. And one would expect some form of cooperation in terms of at least overall guidance or structure or method, methodology. Is, from the perspective you take, does it mean that there will be room for a more formal investigative process? Because as I understand it, we are in a preliminary process to determine whether an investigation should continue. Would that be in line with the rules and your opinion? Because certain of these, or the applicability and the measure to which they are applicable, will probably also depend on the nature, the wider scope of accountability, or or what phase? In other words, are we in a preliminary phase and or a investigative phase? If you follow what I mean. Certain of these rules, I would guess, would be more enforceable in a more formal investigative process than in a less formal investigative process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. From what I'm picking up from the input made by Advocate Jenkins is that we are merely on an oversight role which the Portfolio Committee is tasked with, to ask questions to the Minister and compile our report out of that. So, just for clarity, this is not an inquiry. Us doing our day-to-day work as the PPC on mineral resource to ensure that we gain clarity on these questions. But also, we find the nature of the questions, Honorable Chair, they are often out of the scope of mineral resources. Therefore, it leaves me, Advocate Jenkins, with a battle of trying to understand what are we really doing as a committee. Maybe to put something on the table, we pose questions on Freddie Dairy project in the Free State. Yet we have a Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources. What is that going to lead to? As you said, we must be asking questions, looking at what findings we are wanting to get to. And I think then that becomes out of our mandate if we are going that route, because it's something that is related to the Portfolio Committee of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. So will it assist the committee perhaps to start moving the things that are not our core mandate out, so that we look at the issues that are really focusing to the mandate of the Portfolio on Mineral Resources? Thank you, Chair.
Perhaps, Advocate, you could give us some guidance as to whether there is a standard or a test that must be taken before you decide to turn that general oversight inquiry into a very specific investigative process, as has happened in the Committee on Public Enterprises? Is there a step, a threshold that you have to meet to take that decision?
Okay. Advocate, my, okay, let you answer first so that, but you might be put in a frying pan here. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think, Chair, the question, if there's some sort of cooperation or from Honorable Schmidt, maybe the question was also whether there should be some consistency between the various committees dealing with these issues and the applicability of the various rules. Then there's nothing that I'm aware of in the National Assembly rules that says one committee must follow the same process as another committee dealing with, in this case, the mandate given by the House Chairperson to look into these leaked emails. Each committee has the power to determine its own procedure. I think from my perspective, I'm going to focus on that, Chair. Now, I'm here as a legal advisor, so I focus on that. Parliament itself is made up of political parties, so political parties decide what's happening. But from us, I advise members, chairpersons, speakers, and so on, what can be done. So you can do whatever you want to, as long as it's within the rules, and if a process is then followed, and this is the sort of risk I pointed out, if a process is followed where someone's might be implicated in whatever conduct, then of course we're moving into a quasi-judicial process. There's certain new rules, and I think that your question touched on that. Then those new rules start kicking in. And that's what the Tshabalala case said. Then a court is going to say, look, if you're going to have this kind of quasi-judicial process, certainly there's certain rights that can be affected, and you have to then allow the minister or certain officials that are implicated. If it's a complicated matter, you have to allow them legal representation. If there's evidence being placed before them, you'll have to allow them to look at that evidence and to answer that evidence, because you're going to come up with a finding. In a general oversight thing, your question wasn't so much on that. In general oversight thing, there's not necessarily a finding that you make. We're looking more at what I said in the beginning, section 42.3 of the Constitution. 42.3 says the committee must ensure that there's government by the people, and then it says what it must do. It says it must ensure you are elected to represent the people and to ensure government by the people under the Constitution. And this you do by, amongst other things, we know, choosing the president, providing a national forum for public consideration of issues, and then by passing legislation and, in this case, scrutinizing and overseeing executive action. So the line is that we know what it is, that we have people giving the mandate to members of parliament through political parties to do certain things. And the oversight is coming back, is sort of the feedback into the people to say, this is what we have found. So what we're doing in an inquiry then, in an oversight inquiry, we're opening that up. And we're showing the people of South Africa, this is what's happening behind the scenes. This is what you don't know was happening. So when we're going to elections, keep this in mind. Whereas the statutory inquiry is more make a finding, because we are going to dismiss someone from the board, we're going to replace you, etc., or even file criminal complaints. So the answer, Honorable Smith, is that there's nothing really that says you must do it the same way as the others. If there is some kind of consistency, that would be a political issue that's been dealt with, and it's a long way of getting to that answer. The issue of the core mandate, Honorable Mandela, I completely agree with you. I mean, the Constitution actually sets it out there as well, that we must have effective and efficient government, and in the case of officials, we need to advise as well what is effective and efficient. So it would not be effective and efficient, specifically not efficient, for a committee to deal with areas that falls within another portfolio committee that they will also deal with. I work quite a bit with finance committees, and then you have the separation between appropriations and finance. So when we're dealing with an appropriation matter, it's no point for the Finance Committee to engage itself overly with it. I mean, obviously, questions arise and they impact on each other. There's overlapping issues dovetail, there's overlapping areas. But it's to be effective and efficient, one must actually draw the line and say, okay, well, let us deal with that part and you deal with that part. And the example you used is very apt. I mean, if it's about farming, certainly another committee must deal with it. This committee is for mineral resources. So one must be clear about what exactly is the purpose of the exercise, which you also mentioned, and then what are we going to do? What are we going to look at? So that area of dealing with the questions that we want the minister to answer is very important. It sort of gets an info, and you're not limited by it, but it becomes an informal terms of reference of that the committee wants to deal with. To say, look, this is what we want to deal with, this is what's out there, we want to focus on this with our available resources, and we want the minister to respond to these areas. There is no, Honourable Lauren? There's no test or standard that will make your oversight inquiry, if I can call it that, into a more focused quasi-judicial inquiry. Again, it's a committee that will decide, and there's no certain step that must be there, some sort of fact, legal fact or jurisdictional fact that says, okay, this must go into another area. The examples I used with the opinion, I mean, specifically the Powers and Privileges Act, it requires that there is a certain disciplinary process, and it must be fair, procedurally fair and reasonable. And the Parliament has gone forth and now drafted the rules to give effect to that. In that case, you don't have an option. You have to follow that. So the trigger there is the nature. If you're going to look into the misconduct or contempt of Parliament, we know it has to be done in this area because Parliament has written rules. And it's the whole area is a rule-bound area. So if a committee wants to do that or even change, it can do so. Again, it would be a political issue, in my view, unless it's set out in the rules or set out in legislation how it must be done. But for this committee, what is guiding it is just a general provision that says that you are in charge of your own procedure. And that, of course, I'm trying to guide the committee, having in mind available resources and what also would be, I think, the most effective and efficient way to reach a point of report to the House. But that's really the only thing that's informing my submission to this committee today, is to say don't start with a process actually that becomes almost too difficult to handle at one stage. Think of the outcome, what you want to do. You want to report to the House about certain things, and that's set out in the letter from the House Chairperson. What's the most effective and efficient way to get there? Thanks, Chairperson.
Okay. Honourable members, the reason I was saying that maybe with the benefit of the is to give honourable members to go back, so that when we come back, here is an issue: is that if we, I'm trying to avoid to preempt what would be the views when we have not finalized the questions to the minister, then that we deal with those questions like we suggested, for the sake of agency, but at the same time, thoroughness on what we do. I'm not responding to you, Honorable Mandela. Sometimes I don't like to respond to members. For instance, if we were to go the route to say, does this fall this? That's the exercise I think we need to do as soon as we finished with this work of the committee. I think that issue will then arise at that point. Does this fall to this committee? Does this? But I initially wanted not to protect Advocate Jenkins, but not to put him on the spot so that he answers whether this will be correct to be categorized like this or that. I think it can only arise when that process has been finalized. One of the things that to me I think are critical, so that when we advocate to come back, hopefully it will be a date where we are there. The issue, as you are speaking, that two things: the letter from the minister is not necessary, from the House Chair to on what the committee has to do. It's not necessarily the same with other letters that would have gone to other committees. And I think that's what would help. Two, when the response was sent to the House Chair on what will constitute the terms of reference, the letter only made reference, I still have it here, it only made reference to, what is it, the sections, section 2 of the National Assembly, rule 2. It also makes reference to, what is this, there's a, but the other section is section 167. Now we are unable, because it would have been nice to then say, lifting up, for instance, if you go to public enterprise, straightforward, ESCOM, think denial and others. Home Affairs, it was the naturalization of the some of the Gupta family members. What is this other one? Transport, it was more on PRASA. Now when you read this one, let me maybe read it. It says, I'm sure that you are aware of numerous allegations of state capture. Not even talking about the legitimacy. Numerous allegations of state capture that have appeared in the media in recent weeks. Some of these allegations involve the Minister of Mineral Resources. I would like to request that your committee investigate the allegations within the parameters of the rules and report any findings were applicable in the National Assembly as a matter of agents. It must also be noted, the matter of agents. Now, on the response letter, which is why I think I thought it was the way to, it then states, I won't read the first part in terms of acknowledging the correspondence and the fact that we're still going to go on oversight and so forth. It then says, this therefore means we can only, okay, that's one part where we said, we talked about, except if we were to get special arrangements from Parliament to attend to the matter then it says, I would highly appreciate it if you can assist with terms of reference for ease of reference and guidance to the committee in execution of such a task. Then it says, I will await your guidance and advice on how to handle the process in the meantime in light of the situation at land above. That's when then the letter of response from the House Chair which in total says use your broad powers as defined both in the Constitution and in the rules of Parliament. Now, when I was hearing you were talking about the Powers and Privileges Act, and quite a number of the sections, which is why I was then saying maybe it's a matter that will have to be taken having done the first phase, because in the letter what the House Chair says is, first invite the member of the executive, and based on that, you then decide on what then will be the process going forward. And if you so require any other assistance or resources, that's what it says. Finally, the committee must determine the resources required and communicate the needs to my office. So that is the final part. So, having dealt with this, that's why I was saying maybe we should hold and then finish that first phase, which is dealing with the executive authority, and then say as a committee, having done this, what then do we deduce and what should be the process? And when you agree on that process, it means we'll also have to go back and draw what are the terms of reference that we'll be operating on. Whether we go the route, it can only be determined when, I think that's what even this process is suggesting. So at this stage, it would be, that's why I'm saying it could also be disadvantaging, because probably we may not have been privy in the previous committee, but I'm sure the minutes are there. But also it could be the fact that we are not sure what will come out of the questions that are coming. So whatever we may anticipate now hinges on being able to finalize that. The only thing I must be upfront, I heard what you say. If it was not an institution, and I've always been very open on that one, none of us here are here on a vacation or voluntary. We're here because we represent specific constituencies on a mandate. So we are here in a political mandate. I don't think that exercise will I'm honest, I know it's in the law, but to make a determination whether a matter on merits and so forth, from this chair, I'm not going to say from others. I can imagine when I say, no, don't answer that question, you are correct, don't answer it, the matter is sub judice. The committee will be something else. Or you say, no, this matter is not sub judice. Continue. So that thing that it is dependent on the presiding officer, either the chair of the committee or the speaker, it may not be necessarily depend on the subject matter. Otherwise, to exercise a discretion from a chair that this matter is, yes, is sub judice or is not sub judice, it can just create conflict. I think it is a subject that if members feel, but I would have loved to see, because discretion could be from a point of view of how the matter relates to, in terms of its political emotions, rather than just a discretionary vote. I don't see when a member asks, no, don't ask that question, because that question tempers on the sub judice rule. From a chair's point of view, it could cause chaos in a meeting. This is to me the only concern, that if this sub judice is on the basis of the mood of the chair or the attitude of the presiding officer, I don't think it will assist or help the meeting. But I take note of that. We will have to find a way to say, how do we get around? I thought there would be something that is clearly says this. It means the individual who's asking the question, but also the individual who's responding on the question, when there's a need to find a middle ground on how do you deal with those issues. But I don't know, honorable members, I don't want to delve much. Do we still agree that when we call the minister, immediately we give, if we start at 9, we finish at 11, immediately we start now through this process to say, what next? What do we think has to be done? If we don't agree and disagree, and we disagree until time lapses, we will then also be within our own right to determine another day where we will come back again and say we have to find a way through of this exercise. But for now, I'm quite convinced that we will not be able to deal with that second level, except if members have got a different view. Until we get the minister, then we then start this process as to which, even if we want to discuss which belongs to us, which one doesn't belong to us, where this one is supposed to go, where this one is not supposed to go, it can only take place when we have exhausted that process. Do you agree that the minister, when he's here, will take that time, 9 to 11, after that we take a break, we then come back and talk about what is the way forward so that we get a sense of what has to be done. Honorable Schmidt? Honorable Mandela?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think that's broadly in agreement with what our discussion was the last meeting, except that we said that subject to discretion. I mean, if we need until 12 o'clock, then so be it. I mean, if we finish at 10 o'clock, so be it, but that is not enforced strictly. And the other issue which I'd like to ask is, can we also have copies of that legal opinion which was forwarded to you, because it enables us to also have a look at it and to be interacting with the whoever needs to be interacted with. So the legal opinion provided by Mr. Jenkins. Sorry, where is it? Oh, it's misdistributed now. Okay, thanks. I haven't seen it. Thanks. So, thank you. But that should have been yesterday. But so be it. Mr. Chair, and then one thing that's bothering me, because it's all about interpretation. And you've read that letter, and I think we do have a copy of the letter which was sent to you. And maybe that's where we may require a bit of legal advice, but I'll leave it up to you. But from what you've read, you will recall that it has to do with allegations in the media and refers indirectly, I guess, to the leaked emails you referred to. a lot of those emails and media allegations has to do with, let's call it personal issues or personal matters or personal issues where the minister, it, as his position as minister, would have been treated to and or received benefits and or influenced issues which, had he not been a minister, wouldn't have been able to do so. In other words, there's a very argumentative or thin line between his position as a minister and his ability to have influenced and have to been, let's put it, not I'm saying he's been corrupted, but to have been corrupted is the allegation. So a lot of these issues do not necessarily reflect to his department as such, but to his position as minister of the department, having been able to influence and to have been, let's say, put in inverted commas, corrupted. You follow what I mean? So it's not strictly a function vis-a-vis the department. It's vis-a-vis his position as minister of the department, which would, may and or may not have had an impact on the department and or decisions that have been taken. Do I understand it correctly? Thank you, Mr.
I don't want to go there. That's why I say, at that time, you will then discuss that point. At that time, you will discuss that point. For now, that's why I said even to Honorable Mandela, I don't want to respond to him. But my plea is that when we arrive at that point, it's our duty, exactly like you say, to say, this is what we think, this is what we think. So that whatever way forward that we find it within the context of what is there. So I'm not ruling out, I'm just saying the match has not started yet. So when it has started, we will then deal with that issue. There are issues, for instance, that the Advocate Jenkins talked about, that if we follow a specific route, we'll then have to kick in, completely different from what we are actually doing now. So we will deal with those issues again to say, what then is supposed to kick in? We will deal with the issue, what then, on the basis of what we are discussing, what then should be a area, if, what did you call it? You said, what is the tip of point or some tipping point? We will deal with that issue to say, as we go here, finally, this is the intention where we want to come to an end. So I'm not ruling out both you and Honorable Mandela. I'm just saying, let's wait for that time. But for now, with the commitment that the DG has given us, not as a representative, by the way, I've got three advocates in the House, so he's up to the task as an advocate himself to understand that he has made a commitment, but he's not an advocate representing someone, he's just representing the department and will convey that. I take it that you move that we follow that route. Any second, Honorable Mandela? Don't be afraid to agree with to second Honorable Schmidt. It's not a crime. You're a committee member.
No, Chair. I'm just trying to tease out the issue before us as a committee that wouldn't it assist us in arriving at a finding we want to arrive at, if we understand what are the questions we are to put to the minister. I said in the first session, Honorable Chair, and we dug up as many of the questions we could in the media in terms of allegations, because, and this is my problem, Honorable Chair, we're dealing with the allegations, numerous allegations in the media. It's not a source that has come to the committee, that has filed the complaint, that we can now engage with that source and entertain those issues. So we're dealing with speculations that are sitting in the media, and you're asking a parliament, a portfolio committee of parliament, to sit on speculation and media allegations.
I find it really difficult as a member, Honorable Chair, to then try and entertain as to what is the finding we are hoping to arrive at. We sponsored as many questions as possible, which are just of what you are able to gather in the media. And I'm trying to understand, if we are to arrive at a finding, where are the issues that are specific to mineral resources? And perhaps this was the question we should have asked, honorable members, from the beginning of this exercise. From the beginning that we received the letter from the House Chair as to what is exactly is he asking us to do? And for me, we can have another session, Honorable Chair, with the Minister. What if we don't finish the questions that are seemingly said to be concluded by 11? And then we exhaust another day. Are we going to seek another day after and seek yet another day of just sponsoring questions that are unrelated to mineral resources? I think we ought to ask ourselves, and the time we pay into this committee, what is of real importance to the people of the Republic of South Africa in terms of mineral resources? And is there anything that we have found to be unjust that the minister has done in that regard? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable beginning. Thank you very much. I wish to second my colleague. I think he was raising a point that it's important that we continue with our work in the next meeting. And once we continue with our work and the process which is outlined, that from there we'll be able to say where are we going in moving forward. I think it is important that we just not to continue with this matter now, because there's no way we're going to at the end of the day. The process is outlined. The guidance from Genix, we do have the guidance now, legal advice. And therefore, in the next meeting where the HOT will give us the information, the dates, and then we'll take it from there. And then in that meeting, when we finish asking questions, we'll sit and have a way forward, that we go to step two, or what will be the change of events in going forward. So let's really not really assume what is going to take place in that particular meeting. Let's make sure that we deal with that when we are in that second meeting. I think I will support your proposal that it's high time that we go forward from this particular matter. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, we agreed in the meeting, and the minister also accepted, made that commitment, that we have not finished with the questions. That's what the records say. We won't finish the questions, and he is going to avail himself again, give us time. Two, we will deal with the questions to the minister. In the last meeting, which we are going to confirm the minutes now, we agreed that we were going to go, and then we had hoped that the minister would be here today. We will have the minister from 9 to 11, and then we start that process. Now, I think the issue then that we're raising is that all these discussions, we will then ensue as soon as we finish the first process that we've already started. And I think those questions, Honorable Mandel, will be relevant then to say, was it a worth exercise to embark upon? Was it giving it clarity? And so forth and so forth. To what extent is assisted to guide us? And at that stage, we will, I would say again, like I said last time, which I think to me that should. I can't say to members now, see, if it was the parliamentary process questions to the ministers, economic cluster and so forth, then I would say forward the questions by this time. We can't, it's going to be difficult now because members, they want to keep their questions to themselves. All the plea that we can do from a chair's point of view will be that, and which is what I said initially to say, even if we go to other questions, can we stick to those that will give the committee its executive, its responsibility to deal with question, with actions of the executive authority. And that will only the appeal I can make, but I don't want to preempt what members would be carrying as questions. I don't want also to allow a debate whether this is relevant or not. We will deal with that issue when we meet and the minister is present. I will see how do I apply my flexibility, Honorable Schmidt, on the 11 to 12. I will see. That is not sub judice. I can make a ruling on it. That's why my appeal is always, and I must make this appeal. Maybe when I start, I will do the same thing. I feel sometimes there is a level of not understanding. You know, there's something I always say. You can make your point, and it goes through. You still cool being yourself. I always say I want to avoid the meeting that gets diverted to deal with issues, because all what that thing does, it's going to go to the, what you are suggesting. Then by 11 o'clock, when we're supposed to say, no, we have not finished, only to find out we spend more time either heckling each other or interjecting or using language that is not necessarily supposed to be language from honorable member. So in one meeting I once said, and I'm not saying this, I said, unfortunately, I never got training for, what do you call, an early childhood development. I never went for an early childhood development course. I believe I'm dealing with people that can take responsibility. So as long as all of us, you appreciate the task we have, the trust that our people have placed on us, none of us is here on the basis that you can play too much or you can insult too much or you can undermine each other too much. Then we say the criteria is that because what then happens is that you cross each other with words, but substantively, you are not achieving anything. So my focus is just, let's deal with those things. My request, the point we're saying, in order also not to be in a conflict of arguments, I'm not saying you are wrong, Honorable Smith, probably sitting here, I may not have thought it in that language. We can only deal with that. What is it? But I don't want to draw a conclusion of what we're saying to say they may not, because I don't know what questions other members will come with. So I can't say they're only about him as a minister, not necessarily the actions of what executive actions that he would have taken in the department. Maybe the questions that are coming may go straight. That's why I initially made the example to say, if that this matter is about this, then. But my plea is that even if we're to go to that, can we also start zooming in on what do we think is about executive action, so that before we go to that debate, whether this is like this, others will come and say this is like that, are there any issues that are clear? We can only answer that question of that statement of yours when we are done with the questions. So, having heard some of that being seconded, Advocate Jenkins, thank you very much. But can you see that you just scratched the surface? Can we be our adopted adult, not child? Yeah, can you adopt? Look, please, I'm not underestimating or undermining what other committees are doing. Sometimes when you've got this one today giving you, and I'm not saying you are giving different legal advice, please understand me. But like I said, you will see the letters themselves. That's why I made that example to say. You can see how complex this one is. There is no doubt, like I said, there is no doubt from other committees on what they were supposed to be dealing with. So we will need, so that we don't have to rebrief another person when he's coming. But please, if we have to go and talk to a judge in court on that day or whatever, from a chairperson's point of view, I can do my best to plead on your behalf on the date that the minister will be coming, because that's when we will need more clarity, because you will also have the benefit of what would have taken place. Thank you very much. We can dispense of this matter. Advocate Tumukwena, my dear DG, that's your first tough task assignment. I will be dependent on you. Okay, can we go to the minutes? The minutes of the 25th October. On page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. I must check whether they are still awake. Any mover of the minutes? Honorable Mandela?
Thanks, Chair. I would like to move for the adoption of the minutes of the 25th October 2017 as a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I wish to second, Chair.
Any matters arising?
Any announcement, boss? Nothing? Nothing? Okay. This is the shortest ever portfolio committee meeting I've ever had in Parliament. I didn't think, to be honest, I didn't think by this time you would be finished. You are released. You are released.